Well, I really appreciate the opportunity to be here. It turns out that I have no idea what I should talk about. So I asked Siv, whoops, I asked Siv what I should say, and he sent me this really, really nice little thing. He said, you have essentially carte blanche to talk on any particular aspects or problems you'd like to. However, what would be great would be if you could illustrate the potential of mathematics to move the medical sciences forward and itself benefit from the interaction, from this interaction. Well, you've heard that from every speaker before this. I think he said exactly the same note to everyone. So I really have nothing new to say. You've heard it all before, but I tried to come up with a title, and I had a really hard time. I thought that was pretty corny. Prescription for a Healthy Relationship. But I thought it was probably better than the other title I came up, which was Take 3n squared minus 10, where n is equal to 2 of these, and call me in the morning. I didn't think that was particularly good either. So I really don't have a good title, but we'll try to... I want to give you a little bit of my perspective as a mathematician. So you've heard, in fact, you've heard from people in the medical field about what they think mathematical medicine is about. I'd like to give you sort of my perspective, but it turns out it's pretty close to theirs. So you've already heard that the dilemma we face is that there's a staggering amount of data. The data stream coming in now is unheard of in terms of what is being collected experimentally. And the complexity of biological systems that we're seeing is absolutely enormous. We just saw in this beautiful talk before the enormous complexity of the immune system. Take any system you want. They're all incredibly complex. However, the parts list, or at least the genes, seem to be fairly complete. We think there are 30,000 genes in the human genome, but how these parts work together is essentially unknown. Furthermore, much of what we claim to be known is correlative rather than mechanistic. It's historical rather than predictive. It's qualitative rather than quantitative. And so we have this dilemma that we face. Now, there's one other thing that has happened in the last 20 years that is a significant modern development. That is the advent of the modern scientific computing. That is, we all now have on our desks incredibly powerful tools to do, and we have no idea what. Most of us have bought computers for our homes, and we have no idea what to do with them, but we know we need them. So here we are faced with an enormous problem, a huge amount of data, and this tool, and we don't know what to do with the tool. And so the question is, can we somehow bring this problem and this tool together and do something useful? And the question then is, what do we do with all this computing power? And this is where I believe mathematics can step in. In particular, I try to ask the question, can math help? And my answer is that mathematical medicine is using mathematics and this newfound power that we have that we didn't know we had before and use it in useful ways to understand the complexities of medical and life sciences. So what are some of the things we can do as mathematicians? Well, as mathematicians, hopefully we can learn to organize and describe data in more comprehensible ways. Hopefully we can provide predictive theories that replace verbal explanations. Hopefully we can cross this enormous scales of space and time. I don't know if you understand the enormous scales that there are biological, both space and biological time. 16 orders of magnitude of time from the time that a chemical reaction takes place to evolutionary time scales. That time is 16 orders of magnitude. Similarly, space scales, the size of the genome, for example, which is, you know, on the order of nanometers, up to the size of an ecosystem, which, how large is an ecosystem? Again, space and time scales of many orders of magnitude that we need to learn, or we'd like to learn, how to move across. Finally, I believe that mathematics can help you see things that you couldn't have seen any other way. Hopefully it will bring insight into a problem or something that you're facing that you couldn't have seen any other way. And I believe mathematics can do that. So the main point of what I want to say in the next few minutes is that mathematics can help you see and do things you couldn't have done any other way. Now, I'm convinced that every person in this room has benefited from mathematics in this way, even if you had a very difficult time in college algebra. Mathematics has affected you in very powerful and important ways. This is a message that we as mathematicians need to get across a little bit more, and I want to. But the question that I ask here is, can math help? But now the more interesting question is, will math help? And there are enormous number of unanswered questions. What areas of medicine are most likely to yield to mathematical approaches? I really don't know. What are the most likely mathematical tools that are going to be useful? Will it be algebraic geometry? Will it be combinatorics? Will it be discrete math? Will it be partial differential equations? I don't know. Can we overcome the cultural and language barriers? Now, this is really maybe one of the biggest problems we face, is overcoming the differences in our culture, the differences in our traditions, the differences in our reward systems, the differences in the way we are trained, the communication. And I threw together a little slide here just to illustrate this. I like this slide. I don't know if you will or not. But a big difficulty in communication between mathematicians and life scientists is a very different vocabulary. Some of you in this audience are mathematicians. You know very well what it means to divide. You know quite well that it means to take the ratio of two numbers. On the other hand, if you're a biologist, you know that it means that two cells have to replicate their contents and split a cell into two. We also know, as mathematicians, what it means to differentiate. It means to find the slope of a function. However, if you're a biologist, that's not what it means to you. It means to change the function of a cell. If you happen to be a mathematician, you know full well what PDE is. It's a partial differential equation. On the other hand, if you're a biologist, you know full well that it's phosphodiesterase. Unless you do it in Google, and then you find it means Pennsylvania Department of Education. And so it goes. Germs and fiber bundles to a mathematician mean one thing, and to a clinician mean something quite different. Complex to a numerical analyst, cells to a numerical analyst or a physiologist. It means vastly different things. Complex means something quite different to an analyst, mathematical that is, compared to a molecular biologist. Domains mean something vastly different to a functional analyst and a biochemist. And rings mean something vastly different to an algebraist or to a protein structure chemist. So we face an interesting challenge, just getting our language going. So, in the previous slide, it's back up here, I asked the question, there it is, the last line. It's impossible to predict the impact of mathematics. I have no idea what's going to happen, but I know that it's going to have an impact. And the reason I know it's going to have an impact is because it's already have an impact. That is, if the past is any indicator at all of the future, then the past is full of incredible success stories that you absolutely right now can't live without. And to do that, I want to walk you through the day in the life of a cardiologist. So as a mathematician, I've studied cardiology for 20 years, and I know a little bit about it, not enough to actually do grand rounds, but enough to know a variety of things about cardiology. And one thing I do know is that cardiologists are impacted by mathematics on a daily basis. And I want to walk you through some of the ways that cardiologists are impacted by mathematics right now. So my story, this is sort of show and tell. Right? So show and tell, and what did you do this summer at camp? Well, so here's show and tell. So here you are, you're a cardiologist, you have an office, the patient walks into your office. What's the very first way that mathematics impacts you? Any clue? There it is. The appointment had to be scheduled. And how did you schedule that appointment? You used a mathematical algorithm. In fact, patient databases and patient lookup tables and all these databases are managed by mathematical algorithms. A mathematician was required to write all that down. And in fact, I really think the most way we are impacted by mathematics more than anything else in our modern world is Google and PubMed. Google is based on a mathematical algorithm that's essentially the same mathematical algorithm as is used to rank football teams in the United States. Now, you happen to, if you know anything at all about football, you know that no one likes computer-based ranking algorithms. But yet, for Google, it's made them billions upon billions of dollars. So mathematical algorithms, ranking algorithms, and so forth have been very, very powerful, not only in Google, but also in PubMed. And you as a physician or you as a life scientist use PubMed all the time. And that's a very recent advance. So my claim is that search engines, database management, data mining are all courtesy of mathematics. So then the patient comes in and you need to do some diagnostics. So you hook them up to your friendly electrocardiogram machine, and whether it's a 3-lead or a 12-lead electrocardiogram, and you get a signal off of there. But then if you've been in a doctor's office recently, off comes a roll of tape, and it gives you the diagnosis. It tells you whether this is a bradycardia or a tachycardia, or gives you a very, it can give, in fact, very detailed interpretive information about this thing. And guess what? Where that came from? Well, that came from very interesting and important mathematical algorithms for signal processing. So you have to do signal processing to interpret these different kinds of things. So then, there are other medical devices, a huge number of medical devices on the market today, but in particular, you've all seen defibrillators in airports. Well, defibrillators in airports can be operated by dummies. I mean, that is, it's supposed to be. So defibrillators for dummies sounds pretty scary, actually, but but it's a fact that you can take those, and if you put it on the chest of a person with a heart attack, the machine will decide whether or not to apply a shock and what size the shock should be. How do you think it knows how to do that? Take a guess. Pacing and cardioverter algorithms are courtesy of mathematics. So then you begin to look up on the web, and you start to see all kinds of pictures. And as a medical student or a medical practitioner, you start to see all kinds of images and all kinds of visualization, animations, whatever they may be. And I stole this particular visualization off of the Medtronic's website. It's a here's a visualization off the Medtronic's website of a beating heart that illustrates the capabilities of their pacemakers. And how do you think they did that visualization? Take a guess. They used very sophisticated mathematical algorithms to visualize, to turn a picture into the bits and the pixels on a screen, and to produce that movie. In fact, Medtronic employs very sophisticated mathematicians in their R&D department in order to produce the products that they produce. I will argue in support of mathematicians here. Perhaps some of you know that Guidant just had a big recall of implantable defibrillators. That was an engineering problem. That wasn't so at any rate, medical visualization, which medical visualization is being used in very, very powerful ways these days with respect to in surgeries and for surgeons and, well, in just numerous ways. But more than visualization, mathematics is useful in, let's get it right, there we go, in medical imaging. Medical imaging is not visualization. It's not a cartoon. Imaging means you take a picture, and you have to turn the picture into, you have to develop the picture, if you wish. Now, in many situations, the picture that you take is with an MRI or with a CAT scan or a PET scan, and it's not the same kind of signal that we are used to when we see things. In fact, an MRI here shown is, it takes, you know, rotates around and takes all kinds of images, and then it has to process it and put it together. And here I have, this is a picture here of a heart, and in a moment I'll show you a beating heart that was produced by an MRI, totally non-invasively. And how do you think that happened? Well, in fact, many years ago, a gentleman by the name of Cormack, who was the first person to do, he did a CAT scan. He built the CAT scan basically in his garage, but he also produced the mathematics associated with interpreting the information coming from this CAT scan. And Cormack won the Nobel Prize in physiology. It's interesting that there was a substantial amount of mathematics in that particular prize. he developed and used what's called the radon transform. Radon transform is an incredibly powerful mathematical tool that's used for these. Okay? So now you want to decide. So you want to decide if this person needs surgery, that is bypass surgery. So you need to understand something about the blood flow. Well, I have here several movies, and I'll only show you a few of them. But I'll show you this one here. This is a numerical simulation that incorporates the MRI data. So to view this, loop it here. So this incorporates MRI data with the numerical simulation to show you how the beating heart then leads to blood flow. And so you can simulate the blood flow pattern from a beating heart. And with this, you can also manipulate the circulatory system as if you were during surgery and then determine what's going to happen pre-surgery with post-surgery. Right? I mean, so you can use mathematics to predict what will happen here. And I won't show you all these, but this one over here is a simulation of is used in the design of stents. How can you optimally design a stent? This one down here is a simulation. It's not, you can't see it very well, but how do you design a valve replacement? What's the best way to design a valve? And this one here I like a lot. Just shows you the process of blood clotting. What happens when a clot forms, and how do blood clots form? And this is a simulation of so you have here a plaque, and this plaque has broken somehow. It causes a blood clotting reaction to take place, and here we see the forming clot, and then you saw a break off, something goes downstream. And so in these simulations, we are able to understand the process of blood clotting following a break of a plaque. And these these can be very powerful tools in helping us understand what is going on. I'm in a bit of a rush, so I'll skip to the next slide. So the next slide, but suppose that there's electrical activity you want to understand. Well, nowadays, there are very sophisticated models relating to the electrical activity of cardiac cells, and I just posted up here a diagram of all the different currents that occur in a single cardiac cell. And there's a whole cottage industry, in fact, of people who worry about how single cells work, and all of these simulations of action potentials in cardiac cells are provided courtesy of mathematics. And then you want to understand something about the dynamics of a cardiac arrhythmia, in particular, what is fibrillation? What is sudden death? And how does sudden death take place? And I have two simulations here. This simulation is a numerical simulation of what the surface of the heart looks like during onset of fibrillation. In particular, there's electrical activity, which is identified by the orange, and the resting non-excitable tissue is reflected by the blue. And what you see is there's some kinds of waves that seem to be appearing and disappearing and doing all kinds of crazy things. But the reality is, and I'll get it back in a moment, the reality is that the heart is three-dimensional tissue, and it's extraordinarily hard to visualize what's going on inside of the tissue. And in fact, what one can do with numerical simulations is one can see three-dimensionally that same process going on. You can visualize what's happening inside, and you can see that these waves are not just waves sitting on the surface, but the surface is merely a two-dimensional cross-section of something that's happening three-dimensionally. And so with numerical simulations, we're able to visualize what goes on during fibrillation. And it's interesting, but these simulations have led people to suggest ways in which, have made direct predictions about ways that drugs that might be developed to prevent fibrillation. And there are drugs in development right now as we speak that have been suggested by these movies. I think that's pretty interesting. Okay. Now, my point is therefore very simple. I've done it rather briefly, but you've just seen things that you couldn't have seen if they weren't for mathematics. You've just seen things that you couldn't have seen, and hopefully you've gained some insight into medical processes that you could not have seen had it not been for mathematics. This is just a brief tour that barely scratches the surface of what I think is the symbiotic relationship between mathematics and medicine. Now, I believe that the coming years promise many dramatic new advances from this interaction. I don't know what they will be, but they will be dramatic, and they will be there. And I believe that the Center for Math and Medicine is well positioned to be at the forefront of this advance. Congratulations. You're at the right place in the right time. And I with that, I thank you for your attention, and I'm going to go catch a taxi.